This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen live on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can always stay up to date with everything happening here at the station by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. Stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero pulling in another double shift. He, of course, the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Howdy.
We had a Twitter X, everything's happening on the Everything app moment earlier.
Yeah.
You did use a Jose Mourinho, which, of course, is one of my all-time favorite characters, coaches from, of course, my beloved Chelsea Blues. He's kind of the Spurrier of Europe, except certainly, he doesn't believe in fun.
He certainly tells his story.
Yes,
a
but
lot.
He's an instigator. I think we might have to start calling you the special one. It's still one of my all-time favorite self-proclaimed nicknames. Joining me today, he's had to move his schedule around. Kevin's also having to move his schedule around. So joining me today is a man that writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good to be with you on a Wednesday, a little different. Also, I learned a lot about George because I was listening to the intro today of the Jason and John show, and Jason had a lot of good trivia facts about George, including that he attended high school with one Austin Riley,
yep.
So kind of a... Oh, and you drive a sports car. Jason never said what type of sports car, but apparently George,
Scion,
you drive a sports
it?
Car.
It's a Toyota, but it's...
Toyota okay, does that, Scion,
does that
right?
count? Would you call a Toyota a sports car?
Oh, no. It's like it's closer to a go-kart than a sports car. So just a very
it's got,
fancy
I will say, though...
Go-kart.
It is like... It has crotch rocket vibes. You
yes.
know what I mean?
100%.
It's like the Scion? Is
kinda,
that what it is? Like a Scion?
So I'm pretty sure, George, look at it. I'm pretty sure Toyota owns Scion. It
yes,
does
they do. It
does,
used to be a Scion.
Yeah.
Scion used to make the model.
Yeah, so it's kind of a low rider. It looks like a cop for guys our age. I mean, remember when you were about 8 or 9? It didn't get much cooler than the Mitsubishi Eclipse. Like, there was kind of a run in the mid to late 90s where that was about the coolest car you could own. It's
you're
got
you're
that,
lumping me in with you. I think
and I'm a little bit older.
The difference between you and George.
Yeah,
so I think it's, I'm guessing,
well, you're
I'm
on
guessing
the, you're
George,
on the closer
you're
to the mine.
Late 20s, am I right?
George, you're 25, right?
26, yeah.
26, yeah.
Okay, all right. So I'm slightly closer to Jeffrey
yeah,
than
but
I
yeah,
am
you're right.
George.
You're splitting
but,
the difference. But
yeah, okay. Mitsubishi Eclipse. All right. Also, I get you. Bet you get mad fuel economy in that little Toyota.
Yeah, 25 is not bad.
Okay, all right.
Did you ever? Were you still here? So Mark's dad gave him his old like Infiniti. Whatever, Q35 or whatever. Maybe it was like...
Oh, and the little two-doors?
Wow. No, not the Q30. It was the four-door sedan. But it's
a 50 or 60, I think.
But I can't remember if it was like the... They've changed the letter. It used to be so simple. Like, I don't know why we decided to get away from labeling cars the way we did. Like, perfect example. BMW used to have it perfect. Or not BMW. Mercedes used to have it perfect. You had the C-Class, you had the E-Class, and you had the S-Class. We could keep it simple. And then when they added some of the crossovers, like, all right, I can keep up with the M-Class. I can keep up with the G-Wagon. But now everything is just a hodgepodge of letters. I don't even know if they mean anything anymore. But he used to have what was the, like, I'm going to say this was a four-door Infiniti sedan from, like, 07.
Yeah.
All I heard was that his daddy gave it to him. That's all I heard. Some people get all the breaks in life.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, that's probably, like, the smallest gift his dad's probably given him. just if anyone knows Mark. But it just eventually just, like, crapped out. Like, completely, there's nothing we can do here. Like, it was the, they brought in the priest, everything. Like, it's time to say goodbye. And so, like, it was, I don't know, maybe, like, 6 months into the pandemic when nobody had any inventory.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I sold a car then. It was a great
time. Yeah, it was a great time to be a seller. It was a great seller's market. And he was desperately wanting to get an Accord. But Honda had no inventory, and so he winds up, he goes and gets the Camry, but the only one they had was the Camry that basically looks like a Tokyo Drift Camry.
Oh, the TRD.
I think it was just the Sport is what they called it, because it was still the four-door,
yeah.
But it was like a low rider, it had like the aerodynamic panels on the bottom.
Meanwhile, this is dad Mark. This is
yes,
dad
well,
Mark.
Well, and the best part
yeah.
is, Mark is not what I would consider a performance driver, but his car had the performance tires, and he like just, because that was the other thing. There was two things we were not fixing back in the pandemic here in the 901, potholes and trees, and he was getting a new tire every 3 weeks, just because he was just like,
I was in Memphis for most of the pandemic, and I recall that fondly because I hit a pothole on 240 that required work to be done on our car, actually on a Civic. Yeah. So, if you want the dark time.
If you want the best just jumble of letters and numbers, it is actually my car. GR86. What do those mean? It's a great question.
Did you buy this car because it includes your initials?
No.
It just was a happy coincidence?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the car that I had like before that, if I had driven it, maybe just a little bit longer, a couple months longer. Oh, that value's tanking.
BMW screwed it up, too. They had it perfect.
Oh, the 3 Series,
5 yep. Series, 7 Series. Bam. Then it all just starts with, we have to get into the sweet mom SUV market.
Well, here's my problem. You bring it up with the automobile industry, and I know we'll get into to sports and all that.
There's literally nothing.
This is important. This is important.
My problem with the automobile industry is you mentioned the mom SUV market, Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah.
These commercials are absurd. In what universe is mom with her two kids in the back seat going off road up and down these sand dunes to get to soccer practice? Like, why is every vehicle now marketed for its off road capabilities?
I mean, it's the commercial that makes me want to just gouge my eyes out. How many Kias do you think Draymond's driven in his life? Because Draymond's only had like two moments in his life. It was like poor, and he was not driving a Kia because they really hadn't entered the market then, and he's just been unbelievably rich since.
I mean, how many Kias can Draymond Green fit in?
Fair question.
That's my same question, the one with the WNBA players. I'm like, Asia Wilson, you're not fitting
in that.
Is that
a Buick?
I don't even know what it is. It's a box car she's getting into.
Like, I think it's the Buick self-drive.
Is it that one? I thought she did a Kia one as well. It's her, Sabrina.
Yeah, I know the commercial you're talking about, and it parallel parks for them.
These might be different commercials. This is one where they're like, you can get a bigger car than this.
Oh, because they did my... Cobb will remember this one. Remember when Brian Arakpo had his Geico commercial with the caveman? And the caveman had to say, you're Brian Arakpo, like all-league linebacker, whatnot. It's not a great sign when they have to introduce you in the middle of the ad.
I will say, Kia did have a good one with... Didn't Blake Griffin jump over a Kia in
the
contest?
And yeah. I also kind of like, is Blake Griffin the guy that it probably has more to do with Memphis and the Clipper-Grizzly rivalry. But has anyone gone from less likable to more likable post-career than Blake for Memphis?
You know, I thought about that. I saw him on some random.
It was a Red Lobster. He's on a Red Lobster.
Been playing in the league for years.
He's on a Red Lobster commercial that's laugh out loud funny, and then he's got the he shows up with my girl Kelly Clarkson on one of the Waverhood, the Wayfair Waverhood ads.
Yeah, but like, does a random like non-NBA fan at this point like really know Blake Griffin? He's not Shaq. Like Shaq is transcendent. But we're trying to like market Blake Griffin as if he's Shaq. And I'm like, does a random suburban mom have any idea who that is? Like, everybody knows who Shaq is. That makes him an effective advertiser. But like, you know, Blake Griffin, he was like a three-time All-Star or something. Like, you know, he won the dunk contest. Okay. But I mean, he hasn't been a relevant basketball player for 15 years. Pretty sure he never won a title.
No.
Like, why is he the guy that's on all the commercials?
Yeah, no, he was not on the Boston team. He was not on the Boston team that won. He did kind of ring chase like his last year. And I think they got, was that the year they got beat by Miami as the eighth seed?
I just think they can do better on commercials than Blake Griffin.
You know another one that really annoys me while we're here? The Kristen Bell, Dax Shepard, Carvana.
Oh, come on. No, I'm
the least believable thing I can ever have is that Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard have a Chrysler Pacifica that they're waiting till the very last minute to sell for the highest possible value. Get out of here.
You know, the one that is believable to me is Derek Jeter and his family driving a Grand Wagoneer. I can see that.
I still never understood the point of that one. I do love Derek getting off the private jet to go drive his Jeep. That was a tough sell. But also, I believe that Jeep could be the Harvard Business School study of the worst example of pricing ever. Because
the Grand Wagoneer?
Yeah. So what they tried to do was they started looking at the prices of like Tahoes, Yukons, that larger size SUV. And they tried to price it like that, and everyone's like, "Yeah, no, we're good. We're not gonna pay. We're not gonna pay for an Escalade and drive a Jeep."
These junts start at like $90,000.
Yeah, no, that one, but they did.
That's disgusting.
That one did have. It felt like it was a scene from The OC. Like they had the super emotional music as he was like getting off the plane in the rain. Yeah, you're right. Car commercials, not great. Not great right now. All right, let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. We'll talk a little NBA to start. Also, during the next segment, want to get into some college football takes with Cobb. His co-worker over at CBS Sports, Brandon Marcello, he has got some SEC takes, and I like Brandon. I think Brandon does a good job, and it's also, like, this is a tough time for writers. I feel for y'all out there.
Great time to be on paternity leave.
Yep,
let me tell you, it is a great time.
You are like, you're the sports talk host that took off June and July. Like, yes. If you're writing about college sports, May's a pretty good time to be on paternity leave. So I wanted to go through some of those takes. Also, USA Today, they have compiled their list of top 25 coaches. Cobb and CBS will do the same thing. What are y'all posting it next week, maybe?
Ooh, it'll actually still be a minute before it rolls out.
Because they're compiling their list. They're in their pre-process. So I wanted to go through some of those takes as well. Get into the list to start hour number two. A little bit of NFL news. Also, a little bit of clarity on the ESPN direct-to-consumer product that we're getting that's going to change the thing. Also, Cobb, I got a tease for you. When I was at the beach house that did not belong to me, I actually might have discovered the future of television.
Oh? Wait, Jeffrey,
yeah.
You mean to tell me the future of television is not you having a satellite dish on your house?
For the record, we had some rain last night. Your boy didn't lose a single second of NBA. And guess what
wow,
I also didn't do?
I'm so happy for you.
It didn't crap out. And also, while I was watching YouTube TV down at the beach house as well, because I've seen problems with this thing, but I'm telling you, I think I had a moment of that might be it, because I've complained. I'm willing to try everything. I just know what works. This one might be different, but I'll tell you about that during hour number two. CJ Hurt's going to join the program. We'll talk to him about the NBA and more. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. All right, let's fire up some buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. All right, Cobb. Buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. Nikola Jokic is the only truly elite player in the NBA currently.
I'm buying this in large part because you talked me into it while we were preparing. But I'll buy it. And I want you have a good rationale for it. But I actually did list off some players, man. I listed off some players. And I mean, it's him and then a long gap before you get to the second player that you'd most like to have on your team. And that's an interesting debate. But I'll buy. I mean, Jokic is the best player out there in these playoffs.
Because the way that I was thinking about it was SGA, if you just looked at the stat line of game one, you saw 31, 10, and 8, and you go, he wasn't the problem. But when you were watching the game, one of the key takeaways for me with SGA, it was way too easy to get the ball out of his hands. And with Jokic, it's the only way you're getting the ball out of his hands is if Edelman stupidly tries to take him off the floor to save a foul and almost has to play an entire possession at the end of the game. Thanks to Mark Daigneault for really hammering those analytics. Smart call there. And fouling and bringing him back on the floor. But, like, the other way I was thinking about it was this. Yes, SGA was younger. But 2 years ago, we saw SGA on a team, and that team was god-awful. I think if you put Jokic on just about any team, the Wizards, the Hornets, they become a playoff team. I do not think that's true about SGA. The ones that I struggle with, and then I also like I want to be fair to SGA on this aspect too. Who was the second best player on Monday night for the Thunder? Was it Alex Caruso?
Maybe.
I'm not being sarcastic. Like, In fairness to SGA, Jalen Williams was bad and Chet was bad. For Jokic, the other two guys that he depends on, Murray and Aaron Gordon, were both very good. And so I do want to at least hold that out there. But I think it's kind of the same thing with Tatum. It really kind of boils down to, man, when this guy's on the floor and it matters most, your eyes just go, there's nothing you can do with him. And I don't feel the same way about SGA. And I don't feel the same way about Tatum. I think the ones where it gets interesting, what do we do with Giannis?
He's in that same category in terms of being able to essentially single-handedly lead somebody to an NBA title. We've actually seen Giannis do that in a way that only Jokic, those are the only two players who it feels like have single-handedly led a franchise to a title, because the Celtics, it was such a collective effort last season, right? Like Jason Tatum, obviously, Jalen Brown.
I mean, you could make the argument Derek White was as important as anyone to that run.
Yeah, right. In terms of players that are still active in this playoffs, obviously, Giannis is in a category of his own. He's not currently participating. The only other player who I feel like, you tell me if I'm crazy on this, the only player who, like Jokic, can really control the game, I think is Jalen Brunson. I think he controls the game. Look, don't get me wrong, Tyrese Halliburton has been phenomenal.
Nobody's had a
better. Absolutely fantastic.
I mean,
he did not control the entirety of that game. When Jalen Brunson is on the floor in a totally different way than Nikola Jokic, because they're different players, different positions, right? Completely different body types. But Brunson's the only player who controls the game almost on that same type of level. Who is still alive in this playoffs.
So the problem that I've realized that I've had with SGA and with Brunson, I keep wondering, are they the newer version of James Harden? Where it is undeniable, these guys are incredibly skilled. They're elite scorers. They also really know how to get their numbers.
I don't know. I think that discounts the basketball DNA of Jalen Brunson and the sort of player he's been raised and groomed to be. And no, they haven't broken through yet. But
I think they might be better competitors, because the biggest problem I've always had with Harden is not his ability to play the game. I just don't believe the guy's that big of a competitor.
Yeah, I would say that Jalen Brunson is.
What I'm saying. And I also think SGA is. I think SGA cares about winning.
Yes.
I think same thing with Tatum. I think Tatum cares about winning. I don't know. Like, to me, it's like the real hard ones are, what do we do with Luka? Because it's easy to bag on him right now, but he did take a team that I do not think the rest of the roster was all that good to the finals last year. He had gotten to the Western Conference Finals before that, kind of in a same situation. We're like, how is this team in the Western Conference Finals? And he does seem to have the, when it becomes the game gets to be a coin flip, he seems to come out on the right end way more than others.
I don't know. I almost view Luka more like James Harden, a really talented player who's too often out of shape.
Yeah, I also think, though, I think he does care more about winning and losing than Harden does.
I don't know. The effort from Luka, to me, is not always there.
So I think I can go for that on, I can go for that on the defensive end, but I also think the teams that he's been on have asked him to do so much offensively that he's just not going to expend the energy.
It's also hard to play hard when you're overweight. No, I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I'm no, not
I definitely
not phenomenal.
Think. Listen, I think that that's a legitimate thing. I also, I don't know. Like, I guess I look at it this way too. I don't think Jokic is in like the world's greatest shape.
Yeah, I mean that's true, but he's asked to do different things. Like, you know, he doesn't
this is the other thing.
Have to run the break, like, you know.
Well, like, I do wonder with Luka, is he starting to get to the age where you can play heavy? When you're 25 and under, you can play heavy. Your body's going to recover. You're going to be fine. Are we now getting to an age where it's beneficial to him to get back in shape? Or I've also wondered this, man. Like, I think the dudes that have a little bit more weight, they can take the wear and tear. Because for all the bad takes about the NBA, the idea that the game's not physical is one that just always blows me away. If you've gone...
That little old Mikal Bridges, he's as skinny as a stick. Yeah. He's the one guy on the Knicks who played 82 games this year, you know?
Yeah, but, like, you think about it in terms of, like, the guys that are sturdier are the guys that kind of last.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the Grizzlies and that being such a huge issue in Memphis. Like,
it's like, who are the two most wiry guys? Brandon Clark and Ja
Morant, yeah.
And before that, Zaire. Zaire couldn't stay on the floor.
I'm going to poke in real quick.
Yep.
For me, Bridges is a complete outlier only because he is a true Iron Man. The guy hasn't missed a game since high school.
I mean, it's insane. Like, I think we need to care about that more now in this era. Like,
playing
durability, longevity. Like,
and dude just plays minutes too.
I mean, what, he played 51 of 50, was
three.
It?
Yeah.
53 minutes?
Yeah. Like, Mikal Bridges, to me, is, like, the biggest outlier when it comes to durability.
I made this argument. LeBron's now in this point where it's like with Brady, where all the numbers, like, you can pick whatever number you want and make the case he's the best. I get with LeBron, the championships, everything. What I've always admired about him, the dude plays. Like, there's so many years where you just go through, it's like 80 games. 80 in the era in which everyone started playing less. Dude always plays. Minutes played, games played, everything.
No, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's the most amazing thing. When the inevitable LeBron-Michael Jordan debate comes up, that's one of the things to me that always goes in LeBron's favor. Because Michael's always going to have more rings.
You're never going to be, that's the problem. You're never going to beat 6-0 in the finals.
Yeah, Michael will always be the fiercest competitor, you know, if for whatever, depending on your criteria, like, those things are always going to be in Michael's category. But the longevity and durability, especially in this era for LeBron,
yes.
Uncharted. How about this? There were 11 players who played in all 82 regular season games this year in the NBA. Among them was 39-year-old Chris Paul. How about that?
Yeah. Now, obviously, decreased minutes. But, like, that was, speaking of Mark, Mark goes, could you imagine if Ja ever did this? Now, like, it's not really fair, like, apples to apples. Because, like, Chris
82,
Paul.
Played 82 games?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, it'd be phenomenal. I'd love that. I mean, no, I can't imagine it. I can't.
If he played 82 games, I do think, like, he is in the top three of the MVP. If he actually played 82 games. I think his numbers would be that good.
Well, and just not to mention like the continuity factor. I mean, that was such an issue with the Grizzlies this season. You know, I think I read something where he never played more than six games consecutively.
Yeah, that was Hollinger. I think that was in Hollinger's story. And that's been a mark. That was a mark stat. I think until this year, he did have a stretch where he played six straight games. But prior to that, it was like 2022. Again, and it's like, that's the other thing. It's like, he's only played five games in a row, like, I think one other time.
Yeah, so you miss out on the development of chemistry, especially, I mean, the Grizzlies have had so many fluctuating pieces in their rotation. And, I mean, that it'd be just...
Well, and then the other key, and Eric has beat this down, and I'm with him 100%. You don't have Tyus Jones there anymore. It was one thing to have Ja miss, you know, 20, 25 games, and you had Tyus Jones to kind of be a steady hand. They don't have the steady hand after Ja.
Right, yeah. It's like, hey, Desmond Bane, you want to play point guard, even though that's clearly not what you're well-suited for. Hey, Scottie Pippen Jr., like, we're going to kind of force you into a point guard role. You're good at a lot of other things, but, like, we need you to be good at playing point guard, too, which has kind of never really been what he is, even dating back to college when he was primarily a scorer. And, like, he's continued to add things to his bag. But he's still not a natural point guard. Even if he is a great pickup, a great addition, like somebody that you got to have on the roster, like trying to pigeonhole him into the point guard position is pretty unnatural.
Well, like that's the other thing. Like I was thinking, because part of this was Ant last night. My thing is, I can safely say I've seen pretty much all of LeBron's career. He's had off scoring nights in the playoffs. But there's just not many games where you sit there and go, what are you doing? And like, that's the kind of thing, though. But like, I can't decide if, is there something more at play than just being, these guys aren't as good? Because there's a couple of thoughts in my mind. Number one, what if we've reached an era where, hey man, luck is kind of run its course. Like, there's not a LeBron that has come up. But it does seem to me that this is true. The quality of NBA player now is higher than it's probably ever been. The average...
I mean, there's like 30 players who are legitimately star caliber players.
Right.
Now.
But it does feel a little like what we're seeing in college football where the top has kind of come down. Like we've lowered the ceiling, but we've raised the floor. Of an NBA player. So I kind of have that one possible theory. The other is that maybe we're not thinking deeply enough, and maybe the reality is that nobody's figured out this new CBA. And so what it is the supporting cast around these guys. Like, it's where I was trying to be fair to SGA. It's like, who stepped up around SGA? No one. Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon stepped up the other night. Maybe is it also that, like, with the new CBA, we're not able to stack these teams with the best guy, and so therefore it leaves them a little bit more vulnerable to where we're more nitpicking.
Well, you look at the Grizzlies, for example. It's going to be Ja, Dez, Jaren, theoretically, anyway. Yeah. Ja, Dez, Jaren, and then, like, the budget aisle.
Correct.
Right? But here's why Oklahoma City needs to strike now, because they have so many of these players who are not yet on their max contracts, who haven't yet hit the I'm getting paid like a top 5% player in the league sort of status in their careers yet. But yet, like, they have seven or eight guys who are eventually going to get there and sign $200+ million contracts, but they're not there yet. And so they have this window in time where they have to capitalize while they're all still in their 20s. It's no different than what, 11, 12 years ago when you had James Harden, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, all on team-friendly deals, and you could actually surround them at that time.
But that was also under a different CBA where it incentivized, like even more so, it incentivized you to keep your own guys.
Well, I think that's like you look at the Warriors, for example, like striking gold with a Podzimski, like, I mean, a guy like that, a Gary Payton II, man, like, no, he's not going to blow the stat sheet up, but he's going to make those little plays that make a difference in the game. And then you're like, you look at Indiana. I don't know what kind of contract Aaron Nesmith is on, but my gosh, like the type of plays that dude made down the stretch last night, just absolutely insane, like gritty winning stuff that you know, it just feels like some of that glue is missing. Look, okay, here it is. Aaron Nesmith on a 3-year, $33 million contract. I mean, come on. Like, the plays that he was making down the stretch last night, just incredible for what they're paying for that guy. And the Grizzlies kind of they don't really have that.
To your actual point, I think the thing that I have decided to push back on the most is when you have these young teams and everybody's like, eh, they're young, they're going to have a bunch of cracks at it. I think, at least under this CBA, and who knows, I don't know, what do we have, 2 more years of it? Because I think it was a 5, I think they went short term.
Right.
Because I think the players, I want to say they went short term because the players wanted a new CBA when the earlier in the new TV deal. I'm pretty sure that was like their strategy. But, I mean, to me, it's the same thing with when people act like Houston's going to keep being there, Oklahoma City's going to be there. To me, with Oklahoma City, it's like, man, the only 2 years that are like guaranteed to me are like this year and next year, because I believe at that point Williams is still on the cheap deal, and like, yep, that's allowed them to have the depth, the amount of, like, because that was kind of Hollinger's point, was in his column, now that the Grizzlies have to pay Ja, Jaren, and Dez.
You can't afford your Melton. You can't afford your Kyle.
You don't
Anderson.
Have the $20 million
really
player.
You can't afford your Steven Adams. Yeah. You know, it's tough.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of the Cleveland game, buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. That's the worst loss in the history of playoff losses.
I'd be curious to know what Reddit has to say. What is there? Is there?
Yeah. There is NBA Reddit. That's a special place. In the history of playoff losses, you have to say, no, I'm selling that or shorting that, because that would be the ultimate overreaction. In terms of being a fan, though, if you were in the building last night, I would argue that loss was worse than if you were a Houston Rockets fan and you went to Game 7.
Yeah, because, look, you were missing two All-Stars.
You were probably missing legitimately, what, 3 of your top 5?
Right. But yet, in spite of those circumstances, down 1-0 with your back against the wall, 2 of your best players unavailable, 3 of your best 5 unavailable.
Donovan Mitchell having, like, the heroic, like, gotta have it, shorthanded, we need you to do this game.
I mean, you did everything that you could possibly ask to do to win that game. I mean, we got Max Strauss and, you know.
Ty Jerome. Oh, boy.
Dean ooh, Wade out boy. Here making shots. I mean, come on. Like, they literally.
Hey, former Grizzlies, you know, Sam Merrill was making it happen.
Yeah. I mean, but, I mean, they were like at the John Conchar levels of their bench and like in position to win the game in spite of that. And then somehow, some way, I mean, they just choked it away. There have been so many, like, incredible, like, chokes in these NBA playoffs. I mean, it's astounding. Like, you go back a couple nights ago, in the way the Thunder had it in the bag against the Nuggets and gave it away. And then, I mean, it's something about these Pacers, man. Like, you got to have a little bit of that luck factor if you're going to make a run in the playoffs, and they clearly have that. I mean, Tyrese Halliburton, I mean, with the clutch gene, but man, Cleveland gave that thing away.
I mean, what's the stat, George? It's the Pacers prior to the closeout game against the Bucks. Teams that were trailing by 7 in the final minute were like 1 in 3,150. They now have
it was something ridiculous.
They
like
now
that.
Have two of they have in their last 3 games. They have 2 such wins.
It's like 3 in like 1,600 or something.
Yeah, it was insane,
ridiculous.
Now we're at a point where the worst seeded team in every series, in all 4 active series right now, the team with the worst seed actually has the lead.
Well, I mean, I would like to know this. When is the last time in the conference semis that 5 road dogs won outright? Because, like, I can see I can see situations where, okay, road team, like back when seeding kind of was like weird, when we still did it kind of NFL style, where the team that won the division had home court over a team that maybe had more wins. Like, I could see there were some weird scenarios where 5 road teams won, but I would like to know, when is the last time 5 road underdogs, I believe, of 7 points or more? That has to be a first.
Got to be. But it's going to make for, I think we're going to see a lot of game 6, a few game 7s here from this crop of series. I mean, it's going to make for compelling theater down the stretch, because I don't believe for a second the Thunder are going away. Don't believe for a second the defending NBA champion Boston Celtics are going to wilt against the Knicks. Cleveland, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, Garland and Mobley are going to be back.
Man, I don't know. Right? Like, it was concerning that they were out, because everybody knew that was a, man, if there's ever been a we have to have it game, that's it. Now, I will point out, I saw Matt Moore, Hardcore Paroxysm, tweeted this out. Since 1997, I want to make sure I have the graph. Okay, so in 1997, so this goes back from 97 through current, which I'm guessing is, it seems like the new terminology when you see stats is since the NBA introduced the play-by-play era of statistics, which I'm assuming makes it easier to calculate. So in the 97 playoffs, the home team won at about a 70% clip. It peaked around 08 at about 75%. This year, so the lowest season is the ultimate outlier of outliers, the bubble, because that was just home and away was just
no home court advantage.
Yes, there was so like that was the ultimate not mattering. But right now, home teams are winning at about 52%, which is like the average, like the median has basically been about 60, somewhere between like 60 and 65%, and it's like completely all the way down. Like
that's bizarre.
It's closer, this year is closer to the 2020 season than it is the next closest year where we had real fans.
So are we blaming the fans? Like,
no, what I think it really is if you made me like come up with a real theory, it's the value of the regular season, which is determining seeding, which is determining home court. Like that's the real thing is that, man, it's never more than ever felt like the playoffs are a different sport than the regular season.
Yeah, just get to the playoffs. Yeah. That seems to be the mantra. And then, you know, it seems certainly was the mantra that Memphis took on, and it didn't work out for them, right? You got to the playoffs, but then look who you ended up playing.
Yeah, it's one thing for me. It's like, get to the playoffs if I'm a team that's old, or if I'm a team like Denver that basically really only goes six deep. But when you were a team, like the Grizzlies being young, like it still blows me away.
But look, real quick, I know we got a break, but like, think about how people were on Tom Thibodeau all season long for the number of minutes he played his starters. And yet, here we are, the New York Knicks are about as healthy as anybody left. I mean, you just don't know. It's up to chance on injuries. You can play as conservatively
as you want
high dollar stars, and they still might get hurt. In fact, they might end up being more injury prone in the playoffs because they haven't been playing regularly enough during the regular season to withstand the barrage that is playoff basketball.
Like, my whole deal is, I think it is every bit the logical fallacy to say guys that played heavy minutes and got hurt proves it's better to rest guys. Well, with the Grizzlies, no one has been more cautious. How many playoffs they got too healthy? Like, to me, you can ask the same questions.
I don't think the data necessarily backs up the load management.
No, it's like, I do know to a certain degree, the league had a predetermined outcome when they did the survey of load management. But it was a scientific study that had to be recreated.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if it wasn't true. Like, you know?
I mean, it's just, yeah, it's so mind-blowing to me. It's like, and then to like blame fans. It's like, really? You don't take it seriously? What? And you want me to spend money? Like, this isn't a serious operation. You're not about winning. You're about winning at one specific point in time. And by the way, you haven't been doing a great job of that either. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into a little bit of college football. Brandon Marcello over at CBS Sports has some SEC takes. We've also got some top 25 rankings of college coaches. We'll discuss that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
but not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
There are lots of different types of moms. Working moms, stay-at-home moms, stepmoms, grandmoms, even pet moms. It doesn't matter what type of mom, they all want diamonds from Robert Irwin Jewelers. And right now you can buy mom bigger, brighter diamonds during the Mother's Day sale going on right now. You can check out the 2-carat lab-grown diamond stud earrings, available for $799 while supplies last. There's also the To the Moon and Back gift set. It includes a To the Moon and Back diamond pendant and a 24-carat gold-dipped rose, starting for only $199. Also, check out the Flexi Diamond Bangle Bracelets. And Robert Irwin Jewelers even has the perfect gift for your pet mom, a diamond paw necklace for $119. Also, make sure you check out the Diamond Essentials Collection. It's a classic collection of crafted natural diamond solitaire earrings, pendants, and bracelets featuring perfectly matched diamonds with excellent proportions to ensure you get a bigger, brighter sparkle. Free financing, including 12 months 0% interest, or you can take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at the Mother's Day sale going on right now. 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. All right, Cobb, wanted to get into a little bit of college football with you as we get into peak. All right, the summer's here, season. Your coworker over at CBS Sports, Brandon Marcello, had some spring overreactions, and there were a few that I wanted to throw out at you because I think I wanted to start here. And this isn't necessarily one of Brandon's takes, but I wanted to get where you are right now.
Yep.
Which coach do you think is on the, is either under the biggest microscope, hottest seat, however you want, who do you think faces the most pressure this season?
Oh, it's Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, almost without a doubt. You don't think they'd fire him after year two if they go 8-4? Yeah, they absolutely 100% would. In this era, when it's all about the money, you don't have the excuse of, oh, I need 3 years to build my program anymore. No, you got to build this thing overnight. You built it overnight at Washington. Why can't you do it at Alabama, Kalen? So if he goes out there and goes 8-4, man, like, you know, I think the easy answer to that would maybe be Sam Pittman, just because, like, he's just coasted along in mediocrity for so long. But I think it's either Kalen DeBoer, and if it's not DeBoer, it's Brian Kelly, because he's going into year four still needing to show results. And in fact, I'd have Pittman a little bit lower on that list, because honestly, I think at Arkansas, they kind of realize, hey, if we make a bowl game, like, come on, we can't fire our coach. So I think it's DeBoer, and I don't know that it's particularly close.
So the other candidates that I had, you mentioned Brian Kelly, because I do think if Brian Kelly misses the playoff this year, okay, what's the excuse this time? Like, yet again, you bring back your quarterback. So I'd listen to an argument for Brian Kelly. I was surprised to figure this out or to hear this, and I heard it from someone I trust. Hugh Freeze is under 8. You better make the playoff situations. And so I was thinking, is it this? Because that's my deal, is like, I think Auburn's clearly going to be better, but if the standard is, do I think they make the playoff? Man, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say their chances got a little bit better, despite the fact that they don't play Tennessee. I do think Tennessee's quarterback situation knocks them down a peg in terms of actual playoff contenders. But man, they still have Bama. They still have Georgia.
Well, you want to talk about the, you know, the takes that Marcello had in this piece, and some, most of which I agree with. But honestly, man, I don't agree with his idea that Tennessee's easy schedule will lead to a playoff appearance. I mean, that's his take. I've been of the opinion, even before the Nico saga unfolded, that we're headed towards a bit of a down year for Tennessee. And by down year, I don't mean 6-6. I mean 8-4, which relative to...
Well, 8-4 is not making the playoff, yeah.
Yeah, is a down season. And it's up 1 year, down 1 year, because you were up in 22, down a bit in 23, still went, what did they go, 9-4 that year? Then you make the playoff last year. Now I think you're back to an 8-4 type of trajectory with Tennessee, which is why I think they were okay with the way the Nico situation played out. Because I think Josh Heupel realized, my chances of making the playoff, even with Nico this year, relatively slim. So why am I going to spend $1.5 million more to keep him when I could get a quarterback in here, make a statement, make a stand, and probably still come out with roughly the same result? I think that's the way Josh Heupel approached that situation. And so I don't buy that Tennessee is necessarily should be looked at as a playoff contender going into the season.
No, I'm with you. I kind of was also thinking about in these terms. I trust Texas is going to be good, because if you were complaining about Texas's schedule last year, guess what? I mean, I guess they did flip Michigan for Ohio State in the non-con, but if you were but most people weren't complaining about Texas's non-con. Everyone's complaining about their conference schedule. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the same schedule, just flips the venues. So I feel pretty good that Texas, with their roster, they're going to be there. I guess you still have to default and say it's Georgia, but the same holds true. Yes, Georgia does get the amount of games that they had to play on the road last year, the tough road games, it does flip, but they're still going to have to play Texas, Bama, Florida, Tennessee, and Auburn. And I think all of those could be legitimately the top of the league.
Well, how good is Florida this year? I mean, I think that's like the biggest unknown.
He was also another one I would have considered for most pressure, because he did a nice job of like...
It feels like Napier's like almost like a dead man walking, to the extent that like, oh, if you surprise me, then like good for you. But I almost don't even perceive him to be under pressure, because the expectations I feel like are so low.
I guess I could get with you there. I just always think it has always surprised me that we don't give Florida their due for being kind of an insane fan base.
Oh, I mean, in a dysfunctional athletic department.
Yeah. Yeah, but like that is the other thing. If he does make the playoff, it does feel like, okay, if he makes the playoff, like that, he's probably getting a contract extension, which at the bare minimum means even if he falls on his face the next year, they're still going to have to pay him a lot of money to buy him out. And what we have been seeing is that schools right now are they've gotten more risk averse in terms of wanting to pay the buyouts. Like, I get what you're saying in terms of it feels like it's make or break anyway. So he's kind of lived in this space. Why would you say that's pressure? It does feel like, though, if this thing gets off to like a tough start, like he could be a midseason replacement.
Well, Florida was pretty good down the stretch, actually.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he kind of, and it helped also that he played Lagway.
And Lagway's in it. I mean, Lagway to me is like the biggest, clearly one of the biggest swing players in college football this year. You could talk me into him being good enough to lead Florida to the playoff, or it could be a situation where, hey, this is a really inexperienced guy going into a season, you know, second season of college football, first time as a full-time starter. He struggles, like either one of those scenarios, and that's going to make the difference in how good Florida is. Florida could be 6-6. Florida could be 10-2. And to me, a lot of that depends on the readiness of DJ Lagway. So just a massive sort of swing player there. I mean, I would say even more so than Arch Manning, because, I mean, even if Arch Manning is just an above-average quarterback, and I think he'll be better than that, but even if he's just okay or good I mean, Texas is going to have enough around him to still go at worst probably 9-3.
That's kind of my position on Arch. Like, I understand reasonable people going, y'all, he started basically two games against significantly inferior
Mississippi State and Louisiana Monroe.
I understand that. My natural position is I trust Steve Sarkisian, and I trust that when he plays with that talent, they're going to scheme it up and he's going to look good. Does that mean that he's going to be the number one pick? Does that mean he's going to be the Heisman? No, but I trust in those set of circumstances, he's going to have success.
There's no doubt Arch Manning is going to have success. Will he have enough success to make Texas a national title contender? That's probably the biggest question. And honestly, you go and look at the national championship odds right now. I mean, Vegas seems to think the answer is that, yes, he will be good enough to accomplish those things. Meanwhile, you're talking about a team that lost a lot of its top pass catchers, lost some key players on the defensive side of the ball. So we're putting a lot of faith here in Arch Manning to be that guy. If you're looking at an odd sheet and seeing Texas as one of the top three teams on that odd sheet to win the national title, like, yeah, if that's where you land, and Vegas is usually pretty spot on, like, you must have a lot of faith in Arch Manning.
Yeah, well, I think it's really what they have the faith in is the roster. Like, yes, they lost a bunch of guys, but it feels like now Texas is – when Georgia replaced Alabama as the just because you don't know the talent doesn't mean they don't have talent, it feels like
these $40 million numbers.
Yeah, I think. I mean, honestly, I told Topmeyer last week. Like, we were all hung up on Belichick and his girlfriend. I mean, I thought the biggest story was like, hey, man, if Texas is really doing this, like, they're in a handful of schools that, I mean, maybe Ohio State gets there. But man, that is, I don't know. And I know everyone's doing the rev sharing, whatnot. It's like, guys, that hasn't gone through yet. And what basically Texas was saying is, like, even if RevShare doesn't go through, we are capable of paying this right now. Because I think they were one of, I can't remember, somebody showed me the numbers. They finished the year with a surplus of revenue, of profit. Like, they actually, so for everyone that doesn't know, these college programs are designed to not make money. They're designed to basically spend what they make. And they still made so much money. So basically what they were saying is, like, even if, like, we have got a, like, we're going to be able to maneuver this. So I think the interesting one to me, though, is how do you feel about Georgia? Because, man, maybe I'll eat my words, but I just don't have the Gunnar Stockton gene. And I get it. He wasn't set up for a ton of success. My thing is, I can buy that argument in the SEC championship game. Totally can buy that. They had a month to get him ready to look adequate against Notre Dame. And yes, the offensive line didn't give him a lot of help. But, man, I just don't think he can throw the football.
Oh, well, I was surprised they didn't go hard after a quarterback in the portal. That seemed like such an obvious thing for Georgia to go out and do, was to go out and tamper with some, you know, look, there's a gazillion other examples of programs that did it. And they went out and got their quarterback, lured him into the portal, and that's who their guy's going to be next season. But Georgia did not do that, which raises the question of, just how much do we trust Kirby Smart offensively? Because, I mean, the guy won two national titles with Stetson Bennett IV, which may have given him a bit of a false impression, maybe, of what it's going to take to be successful moving forward. Because it's like, oh, well, we had the local boy, the old walk-on, the feel-good story. He's the guy who led us to our national titles.
Hell,
yeah, we'll be fine
with
good
can.
Old three-star Gunnar Stockton from Raven Gap, you know? But, like, that might not be true.
Well, like, there's the obvious questions of when Munkin left to go to the Ravens, did that just – and Kirby's coming off another national title. Does that just give Curry, like, he's the most powerful guy there? All right, I'm going to go back.
Mike Bobo hire was the most inspired coordinator hire in the history.
I'm going to do this my way.
I mean, come on. There's that. That's an issue for me. That's an issue with Kirby's – I mean, he's going to be number one on my ballot. I mean, the guy's won, you know – two of the last four national titles, and he's the best in the sport right now. But, like, you have to ask Dabo. You have to reclaim that title essentially every year. Like, you have to continue to prove that you're the best coach in college football. And my biggest question over whether Kirby will continue to prove he's the best coach in college football is going to be, like, his willingness to adapt offensively. And, like, I think they've done a good job in the portal. Like, you go out and look at who they They brought in like Noah Thomas at receiver coming in from Texas A&M, and then you got Zachariah Branch coming in from USC. Like they've done enough to maybe surround Stockton with the type of guys who can make that offense better. But like that's my one hang up on Georgia and Kirby, and like it just assuming that he's going to be the best coach for the next decade is whether or not he'll have the offensive creativity and just like the want to factor to like actually go out and hire an offensive coordinator that's got the creative flexibility and autonomy to actually get them to a championship level.
Yeah, and I guess though I kind of think back to a couple of big games though, and I also wonder if part of it is just simply the passing game has been bad, because we use the Stetson example. Listen, Stetson Bennett, despite being 5'10 and having tons of off-the-field red flags, dude still got drafted. And on top
Isn't
of that,
crazy.
I don't know if people watched the NFL last year. Brock Bowers basically set every possible rookie tight end record and tight end records, period. And Ladd McConkey was awesome.
Pretty good, too. Yeah.
So how much of it is, because like I think back to the Texas game last year, the first game, the game in Austin. They came out and they opened it up. And honestly, to the point of like Beck made two bad mistakes that you're like, oh boy, man, I thought for sure they were going to go back into the shell. But no, they did still keep throwing. And like the Tennessee game, they came out throwing. Like, I don't know how much is it. I can't ever tell with Kirby how much of it is a identity problem versus, man, maybe they made some like misevaluations. Like in the end, like what? Like maybe Carson Beck just isn't good. And I do think the receivers were a problem last year, and they also had some receivers kicked off the team last year.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be better.
It doesn't help when you recruit guys who get arrested.
Yeah.
And when half your receiving core is dealing with a reckless driving charge at one point or another.
Best ability is availability. But I think I was going to wrap here with this question. How many teams do you think the SEC gets in? And who do you feel confident in saying, they don't have to be a bye, but this team's going to be a playoff team?
I feel pretty confident saying that Georgia, Texas, and LSU will make the playoff from the SEC.
Okay, why LSU?
Because they bring back Garrett Nussmeier, who is getting buzzed to be 1-1 in the 2026 NFL draft. I'm not saying he's going to be, but like he could be the first quarterback taken. If he has a good season, he could be the first player taken.
I mean, there's nothing to say that he couldn't be. Yes, exactly that. Where he had his first full starter or first full year as a starter, good with bad. Like there were good games or bad games. But there's nothing that says that he can't have the year that...
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.